So there's a song we have called Danny California, which I think is going to be the first single. And Danny California is a character who was in the By the Way song.
I didn't realize it at the time, but when this funky groove came up,
yeah,
it struck me as a perfect place to actually tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes I think it's much more interesting to just tell the beginning of a story and not finish it. In a song, it's like get it started and let it just go wherever it wants to go, wherever people want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's more interesting to not give a story a beginning, a middle, and an end in every song.
Right.
It's kind of confining.
Right.
So leave it open.
Yeah.
Suggest. But with this one, I felt like this is going to be a cool story.
Right.
And I started writing. I was like, oh my God, this is about the girl that was in By the Way, Danny. And then I realized that Danny in By the Way was about the girl in Californication, the teenage bride with a baby inside. And so it sort of revealed itself to me.
Right.
That it was, you know, it's been the same character just kind of developing.
Well, I knew that she was from By the Way, but I didn't know she was from California.
Yeah, I didn't either until I took a look at it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so cool. I really like the way when John came in with that melody for the chorus, the way that it overlaps against the music is really different than...
It's different.
Different than like the way my brain would ever think of something overlapping
or mine,
a piece of music.
Or Chad's for that matter.
Yeah, it's a real unique thing.
Yeah.
I've been listening to this, the first Wu-Tang album, End of the 36 Chambers, pretty much every day for the whole writing of the record. I was inspired especially by the rhythms that the MCs were using in their raps. They were inspiring to me in terms of my guitar playing, and I was really inspired by the way that people like GZA and Method Man and Raekwon and all those guys, they don't just go in a straight rhythm, straight according to how the drums are. They make up their own groove in the music, and I was really into the idea of a lot of rhythmic expression for this music. One night I was just sitting here, you know, doing my usual thing of, you know, I was playing along like either bass or guitar along with that record, and then I thought to myself, why don't we have a song with that drum beat, and I'll just make up some chords right now to fit into that drum beat. And so that was where those chords came from. And even though the chords were written in order just to put some chords to that basic drum beat that's all over that first Wu-Tang album of boom boom ch, boom 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 ch, boom boom ch, boom 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 ch. What ended up happening was not really that different from like Sweet Home Alabama or something. Like, even though
I think Wu-Tang was very influenced by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
I think that's one of the partying-est songs you've ever done.
Tell Me Baby?
Yeah, it just parties like crazy.
Came about from a jam, Philippe playing one of his awesome slap bass lines.
What gets me in that song is the chorus, we all, between the chords and the words and the notes and the tones and the beats, it feels real. Like you really feel the sensation of a person going through something.
Yeah.
Tell Me Baby is kind of about that river of humans that flow into Hollywood.
Yeah.
They flow from Nebraska, they flow from Tallahassee, they flow from New York, and there's this constant, you know, wild influx of hopes and dreams and desires and, you know, plans and, you know, aspirations for actors and singers and dancers and magicians, and, you know, they all want to come and get a taste of what it is to make it, whatever that means.
Yeah.
We get their energy. This town gets all that crazy kind of hopeful, wishful energy, but we also get the broken dreams of, like, you know, the reality that doesn't always work out
And we also get the sadness of people like just really barking up the wrong tree, like not like trying to improve themselves as artists, but trying to get close to fame, and the ugliness of the power and fame being like this god to people, where they try to get next to it or be a part of it or do anything they can. Like that to them, that's the whole, their light in life is to how intimate they can be with power and fame, and how much they can rub about it or get a little in their pocket or whatever.
So that can be a lonely place to find yourself.
Yeah.
And that song's a little bit about the loneliness of a girl who just, you know, came searching for something that she really didn't ever need or want in the first place.
Cool.
Little Wizard of Oz 2006.
Yeah. Running through the fields where all my tracks will be concealed because it's so white as snow. Like there's bound to be some snow to come and cover up those old tracks that you've made up.
Once again, it was John came up with all those guitar parts, those beautiful guitar parts.
That verse guitar part is insane.
That sort of thing where you're going like... That got kind of Jimi Hendrix, like rhythm technique or whatever. But it had been done the way he did it a lot. And so doing it the way I did it on this song was just a different approach. So it doesn't sound like Jimi Hendrix, but in essence, it's not that far from home.
I taught John that lick, actually, so. And he took it from there, but it was, you know, it was the seed.
And then we built a song around it. We all started doing our thing. And
That's the cool thing about that song to me, is that John came in with, to the naked ear, what sounded like a very rhythmically complex piece of music.
Uh-huh.
You know, almost like some kind of flamenco business. And like, how are you gonna work bass drums and vocals into something that's already so dense?
Right.
But we really all found quite quickly our place within that really busy canvas, you know?
Yeah.
That's where the song really gets written, you know, is when each guy like adds his own flavor to it, because in so many cases I have no idea what the actual groove's gonna sound like, even though I have a guitar part, you know.
It feels very cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cleansing number.
What's it about?
It's about the repeated failure to start your life anew.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Uh-huh.
And about, you know, how difficult it can be to get rid of old ways of thinking and old destructive ideas that we become so attached to.
Yeah.
Like, we just don't think that we could actually go forward without, in some way, keeping hold of this old way of thinking.
Yeah.
But that really, once you get rid of all of those old ways of thinking, you kind of start off with the blank canvas, you know. How freeing that is, and how it really does allow you to open up and be a free man.
It's epic. It has the just that big, huge outro. You know? I remember when it was almost funny in rehearsal when we were first doing it outro.
You were laughing out loud.
Well, it was hysterical.
How about Anthony when we first?
Because you just say, oh yeah.
Hey.
Oh yeah.
Hey. I still laugh whenever Anthony starts singing that, hey, oh yeah.
And we were doing it for like, you know, 20 minutes.
We wouldn't stop doing
for
it.
For hours. You were just like, oh yeah, oh now.
I was feeling it.
Yeah, you were feeling it.
I was feeling it. And you looked over at me and just started howling. Like, oh my God, that guy's feeling it!
He just busted out with the extremely manly, like,
it was, right, that was like the first thing he did, too. Yeah, and I'm like, where the hell did that come from? Oh, yeah.
In Stadium Arcadium, I mean, being the title of the album, it has such a universal big feeling, and so music is a universal, beautiful thing. We're
that's
embodying
right.
and embracing all of it.
That's right.
And that's what we aspire to do, and that's a great title for our album.
Quite specifically, the imagery involved is that of a group of people out in the middle of nowhere listening to music together in the middle of the night, creating a light which is reflecting the sort of heavens above. Because that song is really about connecting to people by way of music for the sake of honoring the universe and feeling connected to the universe.
Cool, because that's how it makes me feel.
That's what it's about.
This is one of the few songs, ladies and gentlemen, that actually, I think, may have started out with my illustrious drum beat.
I walked into rehearsal out there in the San Fernando Valley, and John and Chad had arrived first.
I come in, I just happened to be the first one there that day. I sit down at the drums, out of the blue, I just start playing this beat. boom, boom, bap, boom, bap, boom, boom, bap. John comes in. Hi, John. Picks up his guitar. Boom, boom, doom, ding, boom, boom, bing.
The sound was so big. Yeah. And sometimes Chad and John have this weird brotherly connection that's very strong.
Yeah.
You know, they can get inside of each other.
Yeah.
And I heard that happening, and I was like, wow.
Those chords and that guitar part in the verse, they couldn't have been more obvious to do over what he did from my standpoint. It seemed like I was just highlighting something that Chad had already created, you know.
You know, it had that sort of reverberating massiveness of the guitar, and I just knew it was a song. I was like, what you guys are playing at this moment is a song.
Yeah.
You know, there was no question that it wasn't going to be like, okay, let's go to work now.
Yeah.
That they had already gone to work.
I look at him after a little while, I go, that sounds like a song. He's like, yeah. I go, what is that? He goes, I don't know. And that's how it happens. And then take it from there, next thing you know, Flea comes in, starts playing, and it's a beautiful process.
It's just one of those things with making music with people where you really start to sometimes get the feeling that the music was already there before you walked into the room, you know?
I think in that case it really was. Because you know what, when I came in, like usually I come in, I'll play, and I'll like, whatever, just like, kind of just go around the drums. And I remember that day I just came in, and I don't know why, I hadn't been like, hey, I got a great drum beat. I just came in with, and just that's the only thing I played, and I was probably there for like 3 minutes before John came in. So literally it was like that music was waiting for us just to come in and channel it. Yeah. I mean, and that's the only thing that he played when he came on. He didn't go wham, wham, he went boom, 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 boom.
I just walked and picked up the guitar like and started
someone
playing
gave
that
us
part.
A song. Someone literally gave us a song. Yeah.
Can we talk about Wet Sand?
Wet Sand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is a beautiful song.
Is it?
This is one of my favorite songs on the record.
Top five?
Top five. Like, if I'm going to play songs for people, if I'm going to pick five and
you
just
play Wet
them
Sand.
Like a selection of five, I play Wet Sand every time.
Yeah.
And a few things stand out to me about it. One is just John came out in with all these beautiful chord progressions.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of it, and it was all in these different pieces.
It was in pieces.
And then the first day we worked with Rick, or the second day or something.
Right.
He changed all the pieces around. He said, try this, try that, and it really worked.
That's right.
And I remember it was a real good way to open a pre-production process because you know, Rick's always telling us to do things, and we're like, what do you mean? No way,
you're kidding.
Try that. And he goes,
what?
Please just try everything. If you don't like it, we'll put it back. But he had us do all these things we never would have thought of, and it came out so great. You know, like all of those parts that John had come up with, it really became such a dynamic song, you know? And this is one song. Did John come up with the lyrics and just you perform in Wet Sand? Those weren't his words?
No, he came in with the chords at the end,
uh-huh.
with the melody,
right.
A vocal melody.
Oh.
When I went up to him and I was like, John, do you mind if I use your vocal melody? Because I love it and I really don't want to.
Right.
And he usually prefers me to go find my own.
Right.
And he was like, oh, okay, I guess if you want to use that melody, you can use that melody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, also, I heard a couple of words in there
uh-huh.
that you were mumbling, and I kind of liked them. And he's like, oh, no, it was gibberish.
Yeah.
I was like, I know, but I heard something that sounded cool to me.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, no, really, I was just making up sounds and blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh.
I wasn't going to tell him what I was saying when I was singing him the melody of that section. I didn't want to use my words, but he really wanted to know.
What did he say?
What did he say then?
I was like, did you say wet sand? He's like, yeah, I think I said wet sand. Wet sand was, you know, part of the thing.
Uh-huh.
So he forced me to say what I was actually saying, and then he ended up using that. And then I almost was like, well, I got a whole other page of lyrics here if you want to see. But I let it alone. I just let him do his thing with it.
I just took wet sand,
uh-huh.
those two words,
uh-huh.
and went back, you know, sort of worked backwards through the song.
I get the feeling, and this is an interesting thing, because I'm going to say what the lyrics make me feel,
uh-huh.
and it's probably not what they're about at all, because I don't know the lyrics.
Thank God.
I don't even know all the words, because it's always like I pick them up until I can see the lyrics and read them. I don't know. I'm like, I just go on little pieces that I hear here and there, you know? But the feeling that I get from it is that it's a love song, but it's a special love song, because it's not just about loving somebody and how great love is. It's about the darkness of love, too, and the lightness, and it's all together, and you love it all, and that's the biggest love that there is, because you're really loving the things that you don't like, too.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the feeling that I get from it. That's why, and that's so big to me. That's like the most universal thing.
Yeah, that's the theme of the whole record to me.
Mm. To me, too. What's Charlie about?
Lyrically?
Yeah.
The idea that came to me for Charlie was your imagination. Uh-huh. Charlie is your imagination. It's like your imaginary thought process, your imaginary friend, your imaginary kind of, your sort of traveling muse slash sprite slash that little twinkle that gets you thinking and getting crazy ideas and good ideas and bad ideas. And but as I was writing it, it seemed like it began to mean more than just one thing, which I actually preferred. I didn't want it just to mean your imagination. I wanted it to mean as many things as possible. Like, it could be your girl, it could be your drug, you know, it could be whatever.
Right.
You know, just kind of an all-purpose thing. But to me, it started off meaning your imagination.
Right.
Yeah.
Charlie's pretty funky, man. It's one of our funkier numbers.
Yeah.
I must say.
Yeah, it's a funky one. I was happy because I'd made a guitar part that was in a different time signature than what the guitar and, I mean, than what the bass and drums were in.
Yeah.
Every time I do a little something like that, it always feels like, oh, cool, you know, like...
I got like, one like in there. Something.
Yeah. Like,
when I heard that groove, it was a deeper and blacker kind of a funk feel. And it was probably my favorite instrumental track of any, that and Hey were my favorite things to listen to with no lyrics at all. Right. It rocked me so hard.
Yeah.
I would actually pull up next to people in cafes and
crank it up
just with no vocals on it, just the groove.
Yeah, they're good grooves.
Yeah.
Desecration Smile, a little number that has also been performed live way before we started even tracking this record.
When it had a different chorus.
When it had a completely different chorus.
That was not very good.
It wasn't as good.
A very confusing chorus.
It was a whole other can of worms.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was Rick or somebody, I don't know who's thought that, I like that part, but I don't know about the chorus kind of thing.
Rick, I guess, didn't like it, because Rick had been at the Bridge School benefit, and he said that song is incredible. When you guys go into the verse of that, it's amazing. He said Paul McCartney was watching from the side, and he saw Paul, like, nodding his head to it or saying something like, that was a great change there or something, and Rick was so excited, but he said the chorus of that song really wasn't taking off.
And it wasn't as good as the verse.
It wasn't as good as the verse. Yeah. And we wanted one that was, if anything, better than the verse, or at least uplifting from the verse.
That was a song that we knew had something to offer big time.
Yeah.
But we had not found the puzzle. Yeah. We had not solved the puzzle until John brought in the new chorus.
I came in with that.
And it was good. It still had I remember there was a certain quality in the other chorus that it went from major to minor when it went from the chorus back into the verse. And so I think I made even more of that because I made a chorus that had a really major key feel and then back into the dark verse and stuff.
I don't know the lyrics. I know bits of the lyrics, but it really feels like the dark side of love. Like
it's just
the dark side of love.
Oof.
That you gotta love because it's life. This is about a specific situation.
Well, you know, the all of the love songs from my point of view, and this were pretty much written about Heather.
Right.
I mean, they're either written about Heather or they're written about previous relationships gone awry. And just kind of, you know, not analyzing why these things have gone bad, but just kind of more listening to music and channeling, you know, thoughts and images and ideas of what happened. So it's not really like psychoanalysis, but just kind of channel some see what happens.
Yeah.
No, that song works out.
Yeah.
That song is coming from a real place.
Yeah.
And it just worked out. To me, it haunts the hell out of me.
Right.
It's got a spell.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think it's a chordal thing.
Yeah.
There's some notes in those chords that just kind of go whoo.
Yeah.
And then I feel like, what? What's happening?
I think it's everything, you know. I think like the chords are so beautiful. I feel like I love the way that the bass and the guitar hook up in that song.
Mm.
It has a real like it sounds a little woodsy to me, woody, like a natural tree.
When you pull out of the intro,
tree.
When it pulls out of the intro and you just start driving.
Yeah, it's a real nice feel.
I am jumping in that vehicle with you guys at that point.
Yeah, it's good.
Slow Cheetah, my favorite song on the whole record.
Do you like the song?
Huh?
Do you like this one?
You know about my Perfect 10, right?
It's a Perfect 10, yeah.
One of the things that I really like about it is that it's slow enough that you can really hear the words.
Oh.
And I think that's one of the things that I really like about it, because you really feel the story of the song. It's a little bit more literal, lyrically. Is it a little bit more literal?
Maybe
just because you can hear them real clearly.
I think it's because you can hear them. I mean, yeah. it's a pretty big metaphor in the chorus.
Yeah, but it's such a beautiful metaphor. Like, when it hit me, what it was, it's so beautiful to me, because there's nothing I love more than slowing down.
Right.
Everything's so fast, and my mind goes fast. Yeah. When I slow down, I get so happy. And the image of something that's so fast and powerful. I just have the image of this slow motion cheetah, like running through the Serengeti, like, but just in its full stride, like it would go with its muscles rippling and its beautiful coat, but so slow, like in slow-mo, but not slowed down by a film. Like, it's just doing it in this magic slowness, and it's an incredible image.
Yeah, I'm so happy that it's a perfect 10 for you. That makes me like it even more.
Mm.
And, you know, it was sort of an imperfect 8 for me.
Mm.
And you're feeling so connected to it, you know, makes me see more beauty in it, I guess.
I love it.
Ready Made, I'm sure that this song is closer to the other three hearts in this band than my own. This groove is more, I feel like it's coming from that place that I never quite totally felt a part of.
Right.
And I really just was doing my best to come up with something.
Right. Because I was surprised I dig the song.
I think
it's a warm, rocking song, but it's also not my nature either.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real Chad and John nature song.
That's what it is.
One of my favorite numbers.
I wrote that one on bass. I was on this album. I got better at playing bass with my fingers. Usually, I would just play with a pick, and the part in the verse of that, I wrote it on bass, just sitting right over there. And
John just came in with just the heaviest riff and was just so great.
And then
so
the chorus came from a face-off.
Right.
And my friend Johnny Ramone had died just right as we were starting to write this record. And so he was on my mind a lot. I think a big part of my intention to have those sort of heavy metal things at choruses, the idea wasn't exactly that it would be heavy metal, but more so that things would be based on the basic like power chord shape rather than which most of the Ramones music is based on, rather than interesting chords and stuff. I wanted to just get good progressions and good rhythms.
I think it's a really nice flavor to have on the album. You know, it's like really heavy, and when Flea comes in with the bass and John's guitars come in, like, it's a big swell, and you just know something really exciting is going to happen. It's really a good sounding. I think it's a good heavy song.
Yeah, you got to get some good heavy stuff in there.
Yeah. So don't tell us going soft on you.
Come On Girl is another one that I wrote at my girlfriend's apartment.
Often when he comes up with a part and he does have an idea for what rhythmically he wants it to do, and he will tell me, you know, it's like, I remember playing along with you, and I was, so he was doing, he was saying that to me, you know, do that with me.
You know, it was also just part of my concept for this album, just like for Danny California was another one that had, I just wanted to have, I didn't want to necessarily like have songs that were just heavy metal songs the whole way through or whatever, but I wanted to have a certain amount of songs that had choruses that were just heavy metal, you know, heavy metal riffs, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that was another one where we did that. The guitar solo section of that one is something I'm proud of. We did backwards filtered reverb on the guitar, and it's all technical stuff you people
go
wouldn't
figure
understand.
That one out, kids.
John came up with all those parts, those Come On Girl parts. It's hard as to play on the bass, that song.
Is it?
It's the biggest challenge. I'm up to the task, though.
Wow. I didn't know it was so hard to play.
It's just hard and fast. Like, it sounds like a pick, but it's just really hard.
Ooh.
What is that song lyrics about that you wrote?
Well, they're pretty abstract and kind of just image-oriented in the verse, because that was one of those things where you guys came up with this rather non-traditional and cosmic time signature thing. You know, I don't know if it's in a weird time signature, but just...
It's intricate.
And the pattern is you know, it doesn't always repeat perfectly. And, and you know, it's how you guys write, which is cool. And so what I came up with was just a melody and a vocal rhythm that sort of worked with the crazy guitar patterns that were happening in the verse. Right. And I didn't have a lyrical idea. And so when it came time to writing lyrics, it was one of those things where I have to find words that fit into the rhythms.
Right.
Which is a fun way to write.
So the rhythms really dictated the words.
The rhythms dictated the words.
Right.
And it's kind of an exercise or an experimental way of writing, because sometimes you end up getting some really cool ideas that you wouldn't have come up with if you were thinking, okay, this song is about her, or this song is about that.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of reveals itself to you, and like these, you're like, oh, I see what this is trying to say. Yeah. Because you're
That's
coming from a different angle. Turn It Again.
Turn It Again is one of the, probably I think the only song on the album that the whole music is all a jam.
We definitely have had a few things, you know, where when we're jamming, we can actually make it sound something like a song. And that was the case with that song. The verse and the chorus are about as different of two parts from each other as could be, but they were made up in the same jam, and Anthony was part of that jam, and he was doing some really inspiring screaming and yelling and stuff.
Yeah, he was getting very excited.
It definitely gives opportunity to John's recent willingness to express that side of his guitar playing.
Right.
You know, for so long he's been the less is more guy.
Yeah.
And he's wildly efficient and artistic with his less is more approach to guitar playing.
Yeah.
Like you can hear 10 times more than what he's actually playing.
Yeah.
Because of what he's playing.
Yeah.
But on this record, he decided that I'm just going to let it all hang out.
I'm just gonna rock like a maniac.
You know, we have a whole 24 track machine just for my overdubs, and I think on that outro, I there's a lot of guitars and they're all coming up and down in volume and moving around. That was one of the few things on the record that I actually mixed myself in terms of doing all the rides and stuff, because nobody but me would have been able to make sense of it, because it was just a lot of guitars all soloing and all being crazy. And it would have sounded like it was in disarray to anybody but me, but I organized it and stuff and made it sound like what it sounds like.
And it's a great groove.
It really is. This was called the Talking Head song.
Yeah.
As a working title.
The reason it was called Talking Heads, my guitar part is definitely like inspired by Talking Heads. Like,
I mean, everything's
kind of quirky little things.
And the beats and the drums,
too. The bass line, his tone totally reminds me of Tina Weymouth's tone. Yeah. But it's more about the verse is like Talking Heads. The chorus isn't really anything like Talking Heads.
I remember at the birth of it that I picked up a bass that I never, ever play. It's this new bass that like was in the rack that someone gave. I never, ever play it. And I picked it up and just picked it up and said, what does this bass do? And I just picked it up and started going boom, 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 boom.
And that's what that bass did.
Boom, 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 and everyone fell in.
Yeah.
Another thing where there's differences between two people that I like that we tried to do on this record that was part of my vision for it was that one person's staying in one place and the other person's moving. So like in the verses, Flea's playing boom, bum, bum, boom, bum, bum, boo-doo-doo-doo-doo, bum, bum, boom, bum, bum, boo-doo-doo-doo-doo, bum, bum. No chord changes, just a groove that stays in one place, what you call like a modal groove. And then I'm playing chord changes over that. And then in the chorus, it's the opposite. I'm playing a riff that stays in one place, and Flea's playing chord changes. And it wasn't a... It wasn't a conscious thing. Like I said, the song just came from raw inspiration, but it was something I noticed from listening to it afterwards that he's staying in one place while I'm moving in the verse, and then I'm staying in one place while he's moving in the chorus, you know? And it's just those kind of little lessons of movement that to me like make music really fun to listen to, you know? And